It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, it looks like this is a close second for the second loveliest day of 2019 thus far. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us online. That's where you go, for instance, if you'd like to click on the chat room tab and jump into the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live. Yes, indeed. If you do, and I'm doing it myself right now, if you do, you will be immediately met by the likes of Jimmy in the Great Northwest and Squeaky and Warrior Witch. Also, you'll be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has saved his space-folding abilities for another day and remains Sparky. He'll also be moderated by a pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We are off and running for the for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and as is always the case, we have thanks to extend to our subscribers. Yes, indeed. The 28th of the month sees us with 6 subscribers. In particular, we have thanks to send out to Philip for being a partial sponsor of the program, to Harold of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you, Harold. Thanks as well to Randy in PA, and make sure I've got there. One, yep. What? Wait a minute. Yeah, there's that. Yeah. Aha, there you are. Thanks to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon, very kindly for helping to keep the horn on the air. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. And thank you indeed to our buddy Smitty in Florida. So that those are our subscribers for the 28th day of the month. They'll be the last of our subscribers. And tomorrow evening we will extend our thank yous to the Patreon bunch. Okay? Brother Deacon Asa tells me that the stream is running hot and true, both on White Rose and HeadOn.live. That's a little blessing in and of itself. And where we find ourselves, well, remember, usually it's fundraising-free broadcasting during the last week of the month, but with me gone to D.C. next week, we need to catch up with as much of the week as we possibly can. So the fundraising goal for this evening is a standard $200. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a half, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and of course, 64 at $3.13. It's actually 3.125, but we'll round up that half a penny and put it in Agnes's tanning butter fund with warm weather well on the way. If you'd like to help out, run over to headon.live, click on the contribute tab, and you'll be off and running. $200 this evening, and if we can raise it, it'll be awesome. And the sooner we do it, the sooner I stop talking about it. Right. And yes, in case you were wondering, Naked Radio. It's too early to turn the air conditioning on in here, and it's about the only way I could do the program in here because it is a roasty toasty 80.4 degrees Fahrenheit here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. 80.4 degrees. And it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And golly Moses, have we got... You can grab the stem just about anywhere you want to, but you're gonna get stuck. Because this is a thorn in the side Thursday. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's see. Let's start with the emboldened Republican Party. You may recall a little while back, the comms chief of Trump for President 2020 Inc. sent out an enemies list, noting essentially threatening the fourth estate in this country with something if they had a certain list of people back on the air. And they're engaged in a full court press on this, trying desperately to suppress any further mention of all the myriad venality and criminality that defines this scofflaw regime. Mm-hmm. Because frankly, they're scared to death still. That's why they're in no hurry to actually see any form of the Mueller report. I don't expect there to be anything particularly nasty in there because, as I explained over the course of several days, last night, Monday in particular, the only reason I want to see the Mueller report is to see the degree to which Robert Mueller took a dive. Boxing parlance. Taking a dive is what you do when the other boxer swings at your face and misses you by a good inch, but somehow or another you wind up on the canvas with a sort of dazed look on your face and waiting to hear the 10 count so that you can go ahead and claim your reward because the fight was in fact fixed. Mueller took a dive. In fact, that might ought to be a hashtag. Hashtag Mueller took a dive. Yeah. But nonetheless, according to reporting from The Atlantic, with claims of full exoneration, even the bar to prosecution letter says otherwise, the Republicans... And in particular, the Republican National Committee and America First PAC has told The Atlantic via an anonymous source, and any reporter who tries that, namely reporting on the ongoing venality and criminality of the Trump mob, any reporter who tries that will be hit with 30-second spots of all their ridiculous claims about collusion. Familiar with the internal discussions is what they describe themselves as. Their tweets have all been screen-capped. It's all ready to go. This, in case you were wondering, and why would you be, because we know who these thugs are, this is typical fascist intimidation of the press.
Mm-hmm.
Again, any reporter who tries to attack Trump will be hit with 30-second spots of all their ridiculous claims about collusion. Gee, what Constitution? What Fourth Estate? What First Amendment? You don't need a First Amendment or an independently functioning Fourth Estate in a wannabe fascist dictatorship. Oh, hell no. No. And as you might recall, you remember when Julius Geezer praised Representative Greg Gianforte, the millionaire from Montana who punched out a Guardian reporter? Trump said, "Any guy who can do a body slam, he's my guy." And again, takedown, body slam, these are references from professional wrestling, which is in fact the métier under which Trump operates. He learned well, I guess, to the extent he's capable of learning, from Vince McMahon. So just sort of keep an eye out for that, because I have a feeling it's going to get uglier and uglier. God, that's kind of terrifying. Now, let's remove the word kinda. It is terrifying to have a president who behaves in such a fashion. You could even argue that such behavior is grounds for impeachment. Oh, I know. The whack-a-moles on the far left so far it's swung around to the right, and the far right. But well, you can't impeach him for that. Yeah, you can. And if such people actually had a functioning understanding of what the framers of the Constitution intended when they put the impeachment clause in to the Constitution, would understand that they intended Congress to basically have its hands around the president's throat during the entirety of his presidency, or hers, such that at the first misstep, at the first attempt to garner dictatorial power, a bill of impeachment would be rendered, voted on, and a president removed. It didn't quite work out that way. But that is damn sure what the framers intended. And after all, it's the Republican side that is all about the original intent of the framers. Well, that was their original intent. A Congress that wielded far more power over the president so that the president could not wield monarchical power over the country. Yeah. Oh, and speaking of lunatic fascists, because, well, let's just say that we were. Let's slip on down to Austin, Texas, and a chicken restaurant there by the name of Lucy's. Oh, this is for the ages. Big ol' right-wing hate radio asshole, Alex Jones, having grown bored. Oh, who are we kidding? He's the one and only time we ever saw him drink his chocolate chicken bone paleo beverage. He looked like he was about to yak on camera. But he had a hankering for some chicken, and rumor has it that Lucy's in Austin is some damn fine chicken. I'll bet you we've even got some listeners in Austin who could attest to how good Lucy's is. But here's the problem. There were other people in Lucy's besides Alex Jones. And they recognized Alex Jones. And they made him feel not particularly welcome. So much so that, as is so often the case with members of the White Wing, grieved and paranoid as they are, Alex grabbed his handy-dandy, trusty Republican pogo stick and sprang right up onto the cross. Yeah. And there were apparently lots of people with smartphones in Lucy's as Alex began to declare his self-crucifixion. He said he was sitting at a table when other people walked up to him and told him to eat shit, and they were going to get it, going to get you. And he claimed that he went to the manager. Here's the problem. Like I said, a lot of people were shooting video. And, well, is it any surprise that Alex Jones is a fucking liar? He was the one who was actually assaulting the other peaceable consumers of chicken. Because that's America in the penultimate year of the second decade of the 21st century, where a paranoid maniac can go into a restaurant and start shrieking at all the other patrons. You remember the other night we were talking about the Anglo-American tradition of law? Well, the crime of assault is committed when someone puts another person in reasonable fear of receiving an immediate bodily touching of an insult of an insulting or provoking nature. That's the old common law definition. Most states still have some version of it on the books. A lot of people have the mistaken impression that assault requires a blow to be struck, or at least a touching to take place. But in fact, the assault happens in making someone think they're about to be touched. When the touching takes place, that's when it moves up a notch and becomes misdemeanor battery. Well, that was bound to happen, and we're off and running early, courtesy of Irish Dave. Gall darn it, Bob, quit telling us how to modify terrifying. I can't tell you people anything. So, back we go to that halcyon evening at Lucy's in Austin. Yeah.
You're a bunch of wimps. You're a bunch of cowards, and you're idiots. You think getting in my face makes me feel bad? These people are all sick of your shit. They're Americans. They're not traitors and scum like you. Probably work in your life. See that big fat stupid slob? You think your ridicule matters at me? You're a follower, you're not a leader.
Hey, when are you due?
What are you doing here, boy? You ain't tough.
When are you due, Alex?
Yo, I'm a fucking anarchist, bro.
Come on.
When are you due, Alex?
That's tough when a female voice starts yelling, "When are you due?" She's referring to the big old protuberant belly that Alex is sporting there as he's yelling, "You're a bunch of slobs. We're rubber and he's glue. It bounces off us." It doesn't rhyme, does it? No.
No, you're the one acting all powerful, huh? You're the one telling people eat shit. You ain't nothing, boy.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here. I don't jack shit.
I was already leaving.
Go back.
Well, if you want, how can they miss you if you won't go? You were already leaving.
Your apologies.
Yeah, my apologies, sir. You've never been more successful.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you support censorship? You're not an American? Look at this guy. All of them getting in my face. I'm telling them to leave.
He's standing there, and there's no one near him, and he's videoing himself, and a staffer walks by and kind of gives him the universal gesture for, let's get a move on, bub. And he says, look at them getting in my face when there's nobody within 5 feet of him, except the kid who works at Lucy's, who would just like for him to leave.
Dude, you ain't an American.
No,
you're a slob.
You're not
American. We never would have founded the country with big-ass wimps like you.
Yeah. We never would have founded the country with big-ass wimps like you. You know, says a guy whose abdomen weighs more than probably half the country. I don't mean collectively, but half the people in this country. No wonder he's a Trump fan. Alex probably thinks he's 239 pounds, too.
No, you're the one who wants to run your fat, lip-tarred mouth.
Guys, everybody calm down.
Look at you over here.
No.
It's the real world right here. You guys are all pissed because you got extra chromosomes.
You've got extra chromosomes. Maybe they're chromosomes from that jellyfish monkey hybrid that you can buy in the bazaars of old Hong Kong. You know, if it was anybody other than a right-wing horse's ass, a millionaire, multi-millionaire right-wing horse's ass, somebody would have grabbed him by the belt loop and the shirt collar and given him the bum's rush out into the street. But no, it's a multi-millionaire white-wing paranoiac, so he gets to go on and ruin people's dining experience.
I get it.
Woo!
See, this isn't the internet.
Woo!
This is the real dimension.
Woo!
So you libtards don't like free speech in America. That's good. So you got it? Go listen to your NPR and all your other bullshit.
Oh, it's much more dangerous than that, Alex. They're not listening to NPR and that bullshit, as he describes it. Who knows? They might even be listening to checks either side, double checks again. The horn. Your worst nightmare, Alex.
Rally, round them up! America and the world is a waste to anti-free speech scum like you and bullies like you. You know the good thing about you guys, though? You've all got an instinct not to breed. Your body rebels against you, and none of you have kids.
We've got three.
That's right. Well, you know what? They're all going to rebel against you. Yeah. Let me just tell you something. Why don't you leave some other shithole state and come here and crap on Texas and turn in here in a whore? Yeah, I bet you are. What's yours? You told me to get out of here, man. You told me to get out of here. I know it's... Hey, you're a big man. You're a big man. Who said to me? You're a big man, punk.
I didn't go anywhere.
You're a big man, punk. What you are is a coward.
Now the manager's gotten involved and walked over and said, you know, you need to leave. But again, he's a multimillionaire, white-wing scumbag, a racist, a neo-Nazi, a sympathizer with the Klan. And so, no. Yeah, white privilege. That's some privilege.
Hey, can we pause him out?
That's what happens when you let Alex Jones eat him.
This guy's going to fight under.
Alex Jones is minding his own business.
And they came over to my table.
It's a pretty good show.
Free speech, Snowflake! Keep it moving!
Manager's still trying to get him out. Slowly, very slowly, making it to the parking lot. Bye, Alex. Goodbye. Because Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, in the universe, forever under God. Okay, so that's just kind of funny. But the funny ends. It really, really does. Because, among other things, well, there's the story of Jeremy Richman. By now you may have heard of this. But I played the Alex Jones clip first to put this particular story into context. This past Monday morning, Jeremy Richman's body was discovered at the town hall in Edmond, Connecticut. His body. He was dead. Jeremy Richman was the father of one of the precious little ones slaughtered at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. Slaughtered in a sacrifice for the benefit of the sick bastards at the NRA, the National Rubel Association, who are dedicated to making sure that people don't even have any business having guns continue to have guns, even at the cost of precious children. The most precious legacy that our country possesses. And in point of fact, no one has been more instrumental in spreading the bizarre, twisted, sick fantasy that the Sandy Hook massacre never happened than the guy you heard there at Lucy's Chicken in Austin, Texas, namely Alex Jones. In point of fact, one of the people who persisted in the Sandy Hook hoaxer conspiracy is a guy by the name of Wolfgang Halbig, H-A-L-B-I-G. It was only a month ago. How long ago was Sandy Hook? Well, only a month ago was Wolfgang Halbig's Twitter account suspended because Twitter doesn't really give a good goddamn. Aviel Richman was Jeremy Richmond's child murdered at Sandy Hook. And Wolf, and just take a moment, because this community is good at empathy. Take a moment and imagine what it must be like to bury your child, to know that the little six-year-old for whom you held so many dreams, who was so precious to you, would never see her seventh birthday. Because a group of selfish, paranoid assholes in this country are more committed to their guns than our children's future. So you bury your six-year-old, and you grieve every day after that, and you live every day with the memory of that one day in December that changed the entire course and tenor of your life and ended hers. And the mere mention of the massacre is a trigger in and of itself. And you've got someone like Wolfgang Halbig who torments you. And this bizarre cult goes so far as to harass you in person. Well, it finally got to be too much for Jeremy Richmond. And Jeremy Richmond killed himself at that town hall, and his body was found this past Monday. Oh, lest I didn't make it clear, Wolfgang Halbig, who persistently tormented the Richmond family, kept them in a state of constant terror, and has appeared time after time after time. Where? That's right. On Alex Jones's InfoWars Radio Hate Fest. Halbig went so far as to request thousands of pages of documents from Newtown officials. He even demanded the names of the kids in the Sandy Hook choir who were invited to sing at the Super Bowl a couple of months after the massacre. He showed up in Newtown himself, demanding documents that he said that would dispositively prove that Aviel Richmond and the other little murdered children are alive and hidden away in some other town. On some of those occasions, he showed up with an InfoWars camera crew in his company. Monday, late Monday, after the news broke, a spokes creep for Alex Jones put out a statement.
We note the tragic passing of Jeremy Richmond with heavy hearts and profound sorrow. Mr. Jones sends his condolences to Mr. Richmond's family and wishes only for peace.
That's only because six families and an FBI agent are in the process of suing Alex Jones for everything he is goddamned well worth. And on the one hand, it was said that, well, you know, there was no direct connection between Wolfgang Halbig and the suicide of Jeremy Richmond. Yeah, Wolfgang Halbig did not hang Jeremy Richman. He just spent years braiding the rope. Mm-hmm. This is the sickness that infects our country. By the way, a note coming in from Megan. The thorn in my side. With the emboldened GOP crowing about President Agent Orange being exonerated, I've seen yet again another mainstream news item about Donnie Jr. not ruling out a run for political office. We've had Bushes and Kennedys, but this is one dynasty this country does not want or need.
Clinton dynasty. Whee, brooga, Clinton dynasty. Oh, God.
Yeah. How's that working out? Arnold pointing out, Jones has always been crazy, but he's gotten much worse in the last 10 years. Our buddy and colleague Rick Smith has said that Alex Jones is totally different in person, and he turns on that shit like a switch. Because, well, remember that line from The Godfather? Abe Vigoda? Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. Yeah. Tormenting a grief-rent father is just business for Alex Jones. And business because there are a lot of disgusting, sick people in this country is very, very good. Oh, yeah. Very good indeed. Yeah, the thorns are many, and they run deep. I learned something new today. I didn't realize this at all. Jerry Falwell Jr. I thought he was just the heir to his daddy's religious hustle. But daddy, Jerry Sr., sent Jerry Jr. to law school. And so instead of just running a religious hustle, and instead of just running a shitty university, and whose degrees, well, if you hire somebody with a degree from Liberty University, well, caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. Because God only knows when they're going to start shrieking about Adam and Eve going to Sunday school on a dinosaur, because that's the kind of biology they teach there. No, it turns out that Jerry Jr. is in the oil business? Wow, of course he is. Jesus Christ. No, Jesus Christ wasn't, but yeah. Never mind all that business about sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and follow me. That's not the Jesus that Jerry Falwell Jr. is into. Jerry Jr. is into a robust, muscular, butch, capitalist Jesus. And he runs an outfit called Freedom Aviation. And Freedom Aviation is a wholly owned subsidiary of Falwell University, which means it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. And Freedom Aviation apparently sells aviation fuel. And so back on May the 9th, 2017, almost two whole years ago now, the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, entered into a contractual relationship with Freedom Aviation, in which they purchased $400,000 worth of turbine fuel. Jet fuel. Similar to kerosene. And in total, the Pentagon has contractually obligated itself to purchase almost $900,000, almost $900,000 worth of jet fuel from Jerry Jr. Jerry Jr. has him some jet fuel because Freedom Aviation owns six aircraft and runs a flight school at Falwell University, where I guess the young pilots are taught that planes are kept aloft in the air by the power of the Holy Spirit and not physics. Oh, by the way, about a week after Jer Jr. endorsed the Chlamydia Claudius for president, the Trump campaign paid Jer Jr. and Freedom Aviation about $19,000 in what were described as air travel expenses. And prior to Trump becoming sort of president, the United States government had never spent so much as one thin dime buying jet fuel from Jer. Do we have a new name here? Jet Fuel Jerry? Arnold says, hashtag flying on Jesus. But there's a lot of money squirreled away inside the evangelical religion industry. Reporting from a group called Open Democracy indicates that a whole bunch of white-wing evangelicals that have ties to the Trump regime, as well as Steve Bannon, well, there are about a dozen American groups that between them have dumped about $50 million worth of dark money into support for pro-fascist organizations in Europe. Lawyers, political activists, family values campaigns against the rights of LGBTQ people. Where is it? Yeah, Italy. This week in Italy, saw the convening of the World Congress of Families. And the World Congress of Families is an international clavern of bigots and homophobes. And they, in turn, have gotten into the trough for a... I'm sorry, not the trough, the sty. It's the trough they're trying to get all four trotters in. But they have decided to roll around in the sty with a bunch of fascist pigs in Europe. This is the traditional family values bunch from the United States. And And they decided to get together in Italia. The World Congress of Families is a subset of the International Organization for the Family. The whole thing grew out of conversations that took place between homophobic groups in Merca and Mother Russia. The whole thing's run by a guy named Brian Brown. He ran the National Organization for Merge that labored with all its might to keep people from, gay people, from having access to the full panoply of constitutional rights embodied in, oddly enough, the Constitution. Lately, they've been meeting in Georgia, and I don't mean the one whose capital is Atlanta. I mean the one whose capital is Tbilisi, as well as in Hungary and Moldova. Not at all curiously, Moldova is run by a guy named Igor Dodon, and he's a chew toy for Big Bad Vladdy Daddy. They say things like, well, never mind. Among other things, Brian Brown has fully endorsed Viktor Orban in Hungary, who is an unrepentant anti-Semite and Islamophobe. And they have this stupid notion that they're defending Western civilization rooted in Christianity against the brown people. Oop. $50 million. Reading the Open Democracy Report, you might find mention of the name of Jay Sekulow. Oh, yeah, Trump's lawyer. And he's one of the biggest spenders in supporting the growth of fascism in Europe. So, too, is an institute in Rome that is backed by who? Yeah, Steve Bannon. Where's the money coming from? Well, it's hard to tell, but there are indications that the Koch brothers are into some of it, Chuck and Dave, and the family of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, which would also indicate her skeevy brother, Eric Prince. And yes, when these neo-fascists got together, as Shakespeare said, in fair Verona, the Italian Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini showed up. And he has a history of describing the World Congress of Families as a showcase for the Europe that we like. The European, the EU Parliament has gotten wind of the report from Open Democracy. And they sent a letter. And Alan Smith of the Scottish National Party sits on the European Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee. said, "This investigation by Open Democracy is extremely timely and shines a light on a major challenge facing democracy in Europe." He described this this burgeoning dark money-fueled movement as highly alarming, and nobody should be in any doubt as to the insidious nature of these fundamentalist groups. No group of any kind should be able to use dark money to distort debate and subvert democracy in Europe, least of all groups such as these, whose causes are deeply regressive. There are some names here. The Billy Graham Evil Evangelistic Association, the American Center for Law and Justice, the Alliance Defending Freedom, that's one of those legal grifts, Human Life International, Action Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, Focus on the Family, Colorado Springs, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Population Research Institute, Heartbeat International, American Society for the Defense of Tradition Family Property, International House of Prayer, I thought they sold pancakes, and Family Watch International. And Open Democracy went on to note that over the past 5 years, they have ramped up their spending. What have they done? They've sent lobbying teams to Brussels to influence EU officials. They've challenged laws against discrimination and hate speech in European courts. They've supported campaigns against LGBTQ rights in the Czech Republic as well as Romania. They've poured money into a seedy, shadowy bunch of AstroTurf organizations running anti-abortion campaigns in Italy and Spain. After things like the Grenfell Tower fire in the UK and after terrorist attacks, they have sent out evangelists to try to prey on the weak and grieving. And in case you were wondering, the World Congress of Families is described by the Southern Poverty Law Center as an anti-LGBT hate group. That organization clarified and said, "Viewing homosexuality as unbiblical or simply opposing same-sex marriage doesn't qualify you for their hate group list. It's when they start claiming that homosexuality is dangerous or a cause of pedophilia, or when they say that people who are gay should be treated as criminals, or just disseminating information that's outright lies. That's what gets you listed as a hate group." Spokescreep for the WCF, Joseph Grabowski, said, "We dispute entirely the premise of the hate group designation. It's an unfortunate slight for the countless Americans and the people around the world who hold the same views as we do on marriage, the nature of family, and the right to life that are part of the fabric of Christianity and also other traditional points of view." One of the directors of the World Congress of Families is a bosom buddy of a Russian oligarch, by the way, who sponsored a meeting, a secret meeting, in Vienna, Austria, between far-right, arguably fascist, leaders in France and Austria. Yeah. Jesus. It's a little dangerous out there right now. And this, a little nugget out of the UK. Turns out that there are a group of hard right-wing Tory politicians in the UK who have taken to calling themselves, wait for it, the Grand Wizards. These are the people who are hard Brexiters, it seems. And a BBC reporter refers to them as the Chequers Day Trippers. And yes, they have decided to call themselves to use a designation or a title, an official title, that's used by the Klan, which leads me to wonder if they refer to Theresa May as the Exalted Cyclops, or maybe she's the Grand Dragon Lady. No shit. Because, you know, you can do that in the penultimate year of the second decade of the 21st century. You can just adopt eliminationist terrorist organization titles and, well, why the hell not? Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. You know, Matt, you missed a great program yesterday evening. Or maybe you didn't. If you did miss it, you'll want to go back for the discussion of E.W. Jackson's concern about big strapping men. Matt in San Francisco writes, huh? So because there are other people who hate us gays, the group shouldn't be considered a hate group? Makes perfect sense. Yeah, I like the way that you're willing to. No, it doesn't make a damn lick of sense, does it, Matt? No, if you're driving around, Matt, make sure the windows are rolled up, okay? I mean, we don't want anybody getting upset just because I'm nice that way. That, of course, is only the beginning. But we have reached the end of the first hour of the program. The first hour of a program that sees us trying to raise $200. We are thus far, sad to say, at zero. Zed. Nil. Niet. Niete. Nihil. Not a sausage. Hopefully that will change in the next 2 hours. But it's Thursday, and that means we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, which I look forward to every Tuesday and every Thursday. Burr under your saddle? Bee in your bonnet? Might want to deal with that. And if you've got something you feel like you absolutely of which you must absolutely unburden yourself, I trust you know how to reach the program unless you're extremely new to it. If you are new to the program, there are multiple ways of reaching the program. There's the Stress Line, named after our dear friend Bill Mr. Stress Miller. The Stress Line is 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN, Horn. 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. And, of course, also, if you don't have to worry about long-distance charges, 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere on the planet where it isn't firewalled off, well, by Jove, Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And if you've never tried that before and we're not contacts on Skype, well, send me a contact request, and we'll get going right away. This is listener-supported, non-capitalist radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. Time for the Green News.
It's Thursday, March 28, 2019.
Green New Deal is not the solution to climate change. In fact, it's part of the problem.
Senate Republicans ridicule climate solutions.
This is deadly serious for us.
As Democrats fight back during Green New Deal stunt vote in the Senate. New Mexico and Puerto Rico set targets for 100% renewable electricity. Plus, Big Oil has spent $1 billion on climate lobbying and ads since the Paris Agreement.
All of that propaganda revealed and much more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Mr. President, this is the real solution to climate change. Babies.
Some things don't need a snarky reply, do they?
Nope.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, after trying to get Senator Mitch McConnell to hold votes on one thing after another that are priorities for Democrats, Mitch McConnell finally was willing to do so when it came to the Green New Deal.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it? As expected, Senate Democrats rejected what they called a sham vote on the non-binding Green New Deal resolution. It was brought to the Senate floor on Tuesday by Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell without any hearings or expert testimony in hopes of creating a wedge among Democrats.
So the actual legislation was not in any way reviewed, was not marked up in committee, and yet he just threw it out onto the floor for a vote.
Exactly.
Not a sham at all.
The non-binding resolution, which calls for mobilizing the nation to create millions of jobs by addressing climate change, failed 57-0 as nearly all Democrats voted present. Three Democrats voted with the Republicans, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Doug Jones of Alabama, and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, along with independent Angus King from Maine. But even as Midwesterners right now are suffering in historic flooding, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah joked about global warming and extreme weather.
Climate change hit home in Utah when our own state was struck not simply by a tornado, Mr. President, but by a tornado with sharks in it.
Yep, that's right. He made a joke about Sharknado.
It's not all that funny, and you would think that Mitch McConnell of Kentucky would realize that and would realize that the Green New Deal would help out a whole lot of his constituents in the coal industry who are losing their jobs and who are, frankly, losing their lives.
And just want to point out that extreme weather disasters cost the U.S. nearly $100 billion last year alone. Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, whose tiny coastal state is already impacted by rising seas, excoriated Republicans and noted that they have no plan to deal with climate change.
I join in my colleague's sense of offense that the other side thinks that this is something funny. This is not funny for Rhode Islanders. This is deadly real. Disagree with our measures? Fine. Have one of your own.
Well, they're not going to do that.
Well, according to Oil Change International, the senators who voted no on the Green New Deal resolution have collectively received $55 million in fossil fuel campaign cash.
Total coincidence.
Meanwhile, a new report from UK nonprofit Influence Map finds that since the UN Paris Climate Agreement was signed in 2015, lobbying by the oil industry has increased sharply. The five biggest oil companies have together spent more than $1 billion in just the last 3 years on aggressive lobbying to block and delay climate and energy policies while simultaneously funding slick PR campaigns claiming they support action, particularly in the U.S. On Wednesday, the U.S. Air Force announced it requires $5 billion to repair Air Force bases in Florida and Nebraska that have been severely damaged by extreme weather and floods. The Air Force warns it will be forced to ground planes, cut pilot training, and halt base construction projects in 18 states.
And those base construction projects, that's the money that Donald Trump was going to move to his border wall, isn't it?
Yep. But there is some good news.
Good.
A new study finds that existing U.S. coal plants right now cost more to operate than building new renewable sources like wind and solar. That means that shutting down three-quarters of all U.S. coal plants today and replacing them with new renewables would save customers millions in energy costs, and that's not including savings on health care from reduced air pollution.
Mitch McConnell's not going to like that, but his constituents will.
Finally, New Mexico and Puerto Rico have joined California and Hawaii in moving to renewable electricity. New Mexico's Democratic Governor Michelle Grisham signed sweeping energy legislation targeting 100% zero carbon electricity by 2045, and Puerto Rico, still struggling to recover from the devastation wrought by Hurricane Maria a year and a half ago, passed legislation this week to accelerate their transition away from centralized fossil fuel power plants to localized distributed clean energy sources with battery storage, targeting 100% renewable electricity by 2050.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yes, sir.
Yes, indeed. And so we are well into the second, or well, we're into the second hour of the program. And I was just scanning Donald Trump Jr.'s Twitter timeline. And it seems to be, it appears, you know, Jussie Smollett is a gay man. And Donald Trump Jr. seems to have an unhealthy fascination with him. Might want to oil the hinges on that closet door there, Don Jr. And just, you know, kind of wondered about that weird-ass beard you grew, pal. But he's on his own little personal jihad against Jussie Smollett and Adam Schiff. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on this evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Thursday to you too, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia, and what a beautiful day it is out here.
Oh, yeah, you had a nice one down there, Reggie?
Yeah, it's not too cold or windy.
All you need is a light jacket.
Yeah, it feels more spring-like.
Yeah, we've had a couple of beauties here.
Right. Well, it's going to be harder than hell to get rid of the president than it is to keep both your... to keep Jeanine Pirro off Fox News for at least 2 weeks. You know she hasn't been on the air for 2 weeks.
Yeah, she's, the best term? She's spending more time with her family. Yes. But you say it's going to be hard to get rid of Donald Trump. You know how we get rid of Donald Trump?
How?
It's called voting.
Yeah.
And that's always been the way out.
Yeah.
I guess from time to time, it's probably wise to remind folks that there were never going to be 67 votes in the Senate to convict him on a bill of impeachment. There still aren't. And as long as the Republicans control the Senate, there never will be. Because chinless Mitch McConnell is, well, he's an un-American prick, I think that's a decent term. Yes.
Yeah, he is. He is a prick. And, but nobody seems to want to do anything to impeach this man.
I think there's plenty of the. I think of Texas Representative Al Green, who said, "Screw it, I want to impeach him," and there are other people who want to impeach him as well. But again, Reggie, it's a two-step process. To impeach the president is merely to charge him with high crimes and misdemeanors, by a majority vote of the House of Representatives. To remove him from office requires a two-thirds vote of the Senate of the United States sitting in trial of the bill of impeachment. Those votes do not, never will, exist as long as Chinless Mitch and the Republicans maintain control of that body.
Yeah, but it didn't stop them from trying to impeach Bill Clinton over 20 years ago.
But they knew then they weren't going to remove him either. It was a sleazy little PR trick.
Right. And he thinks that He thinks it's the same thing here with him, Donald Trump, thinking that it's a sleazy little PR trick to try to impeach or get rid of him, kick him out of the Oval Office and out the White House for good.
Well, but the thing is, Reggie, as long as those 67 votes don't have a snowball's chance in hell of existing, it is a PR trick. And it's a PR trick that will, in fact, no kidding, bite the Democrats in the ass and take a great big hamburgery chunk right out of one cheek.
Right. You mean like such as those of Nancy Pelosi and the rest of them, and the older Democrats or the oldest Democrats that are still in the Senate or Congress? I'm not talking about AOC. I'm not talking about Alexandria Cortez. She's young. She just got in there recently. I'm talking about the ones who've been there like forever, who have the chance to remove this man, and they haven't done it or decided
but
not to do it.
Reggie, buddy.
Yeah.
Did you not? I mean, I just explained the process.
Well, that's right.
They can pass a bill of impeachment in the House.
Right.
Just like they passed a resolution disapproving of the national emergency.
Right.
It went over to the Senate in the case of the national emergency. Some Republicans joined in.
Right.
And then the president vetoed it. And in order to override the veto, both houses had to have a two-thirds majority. That two-thirds majority failed in the House, and that's the end of it.
Right.
Now, I want to work through this real carefully.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I want to know from you.
Yeah.
How would you go about removing Donald Trump from office via impeachment? You tell me.
Well, I would gather all the evidence of his high crimes and misdemeanors. Try to get everybody on board, as many people on board as possible.
Okay, where would you do this?
Well, I would do that in Congress.
Which House of Congress?
The Senate.
The House of Representatives. Impeachment begins in the House of Representatives. Okay, so let's say you've got your bill of impeachment together, as many counts as you want.
Right.
All it takes is a simple majority, 50% plus one. So if you get 50.2%, you can impeach the president.
Right.
What happens then?
What happens then after impeachment?
Yeah.
Well, we should try to clean up the mess that he made.
No. What happens after the House impeaches him?
Well, I don't know. They can try to get rid of them, remove
them. Well, like I said a minute ago, after the House impeaches him, the bill of impeachment is sent to the Senate of the United States.
Right.
And the Senate tries the bill of impeachment.
Right.
The Senate sits as a jury on the charges in the bill of impeachment.
Right.
And the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is the presiding judge over that trial.
Right.
So what's going to happen when the bill of impeachment goes to the Senate?
I'm not so sure, Bob. I don't know, Bob.
But Reggie, I explained it not 5 minutes ago. In the Senate of the United States, with the Senate of the United States serving as the jury on a bill of impeachment, you have to have two-thirds of the Senate of the United States vote to convict.
Right.
That is 67 votes to convict.
Right.
How many Democrats are there in the Senate?
I don't know.
47.
Right, 47.
Okay. That's 20 less than 67.
Right.
So if all of the Democrats voted to convict Donald Trump on a bill of impeachment, they would lose 47 to 53.
Right.
And what would happen then?
he'll probably be reelected.
Donald Trump will go on being president and will then be elected in 2020 because of the fury of the maggots and the Republicans.
Right.
So do you really want him impeached?
Well, no, because of all the disastrous hell, as you said, it may wind up happening. Because it'll be a distraction for what we're supposed to be doing, or what they're supposed to be doing for this country, right? It'll be a major distraction.
It'll be a disaster.
That too.
If you want 4 more years of Donald Trump, or however many years he has left in his pathetic, miserable life, followed by Mike Pence, by all means, let's impeach him.
Right.
Or, here's an alternative, since we do have the House of Representatives, we can pass legislation that's good for America, send it to the Senate, and watch Mitch McConnell kill it, and then in 20, run against Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump, take the Senate away from the Republicans, keep the House, and beat Donald Trump.
Right. And didn't you hear that Mitch McConnell tried to ban the release of that Mueller report? Oh, is that true?
No. What happened was Chuck Schumer put forward a resolution calling for the full release of the report, and Mitch McConnell blocked consideration of that measure.
Right. And you got Trump declaring victory on the so-called no Russiagate collusion. And, again, you got, conservatives saying that we're following too upset with Russiagate. I'm talking about the ones in the mainstream media. No, from the politicians all the way on down, saying that we on the Democratic Liberal Progressive Left are so psychotically obsessed with Russiagate, that we have Trump derangement syndrome. Aren't these the exact same aforementioned said people that had ODS, Obama derangement syndrome, like 8 years ago?
But see, they weren't crazy because there was a Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House, and that meant, and they were just saving America.
Saving America from what? Or who, rather? From themselves, they're the ones that actually destroy America. Am I right, Bob, with their hatred, bigotry, evil, prejudice, and all that stuff?
Well, don't forget their greed and their avarice, Reggie.
Their greed and their arrogance, right. And you got Donald Trump claiming victory, a so-called victory, which he really doesn't have. Yet there was no collusion with him and Rush, even though we know that's false. But they'll believe anything he says because they're his MAGA drones, his MAGA robotic drones, or lemmings, right? Including those in the media, such as Fox News and whatnot, and talk radio and whatnot, conservative radio and talk radio.
I just call it hate radio hate for radio. Short.
Hate radio, right? Hate radio. That believe what this man says. And nobody wants to seem to challenge him, especially Mrs. Lindsey Graham, the pearl clutcher.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he should have.
He
should have been born a woman for real.
Let's don't go there, Reggie.
We have
our fun at Lindsey's expense, but it has nothing to do with gender or sexuality. It has to do with the fact that he's a great big old honking hypocrite.
Yeah, he's a hypocrite. He kisses Donald Trump's ass and yet turns around and attacks him. You can't serve two masters. Which is it? You're going to serve God or the devil? You can't serve two masters, right, Bob? Who is he going to serve? Well, he's serving himself, truthfully. Lindsey Graham,
Lindsey has the... I'm convinced that Lindsey's worried about something. Because he took a shit ton of money from a Russian oligarch.
Yeah.
And it has been, I suspect it has been made plain to him what will happen.
Right. right.
Yeah.
Why is George Conway being attacked by both Donald Trump and his wife? I mean, not Donald Trump's wife, but his wife, Kellyanne Conway, for attacking and criticizing Donald Trump.
Well, I think Kellyanne may be trying to protect herself because she may very well be the one who wrote that letter, you know? We don't know who wrote it, but gosh, it certainly seems that way.
You do?
I think there's an argument to be made. But anyway, I'm going to move along, Reggie. Good to talk to you, man. Have yourself a good evening. Enjoy that warm, warm, sweet Georgia sunshine.
Yeah, you do too, Bob. You enjoy that warm Virginia sunshine if you still have it.
There's a little bit left in the sky, but unfortunately, I haven't figured out a way to broadcast out under the sunshine and getting my pink little hide a little bit warmed up. But
So it's springtime practically, Bob.
Oh, it is. It is. It is. Even though we got snow in the forecast from Sunday, it's spring. But hopefully there will be so few snowflakes that I can stand outside and cuss at each one individually. You take care, Reggie.
All right. Okay, you do too, Bob.
Bye now.
All right. Bye.
That's our buddy Reggie in Decatur. All right, Lindsey Graham. He is, bless his heart, he's, and you know, that's the southern use of bless his heart. Bless his heart, he's a pathetic thing. Witness this appearance over on CNN.
Economic policy, I'm going to continue to help him. To all those people who bring up this narrative, you just hate Trump, you don't really care about McCain and me. I know this is a game. You're not offended about me and McCain, you're trying to use me to get to Trump. I'm not playing that game. If you think the only way to honor John McCain is to tell this president, I won't work with you, I will never help you, that's your agenda, not mine. My agenda is twofold, to honor my friend.
Not exactly sure how he's honoring his friend John by sitting there as silent as a graven image while Trump smears him. I'm not sure if you figured out how that worked, let me know. But what's the other fold of your twofold purpose, your special purpose, Lindsey?
For the rest of my life in every way I can and help this president be successful. And I'm not into this idea. The only way you can help honor John McCain is to trash out Trump. President Trump has been good to me in the sense he's allowed me in his world. He's made.
Oh, dear. This is going to fuck up the YouTube file, but President Trump is good to me to the extent he's let me in his world. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the late, great Jim Reeves.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess, still happen now and then.
You can almost see him waltzing around the White House. You know, there's Donald Trump. He's about 6'2". Lindsey's about 5'2". Comes up to about Donald's nipples. Snuggle up and yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. I love that. Thank you, Jack. Jack in Shreveport. I caught the special purpose reference. Who else did? Jack, you get the cowbell. You got there first. I just love it when there's no video here, but you know, just throw out a little Easter egg every now and then and see who finds it. Jack found that, yes. Lindsey Graham and his special purpose, having been allowed into Donald Trump's world. Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? snuggle up to me, lick my orange skin. If you don't want any more singing, we need to probably take a bit of a bite out of that $200 fundraising goal. That'd be real groovy if we could. I can sing Jim Reeves off key all night long. Did you hear Agnes? Did you hear her? Hang on a minute. No. What's that, Agnes?
Oh, please, the humanity.
Yeah, that's Agnes begging you to not make me sing. Make it go away, she says. Mm-hmm. She's been married to me almost 26 years. She knows what it's like when I go on a singing jag. You don't want that. By the way, it turns out that if you're on the line, please stay there. I'm coming right to you. Just got to tell this story because it's a fun one. I had to get tires yesterday. That was one of those unlooked for expenses. And it turned out that the little tire inflation light wouldn't go out. And so this morning I drove back over to see what the hell was wrong. And it was about lunchtime and I was feeling a mite peckish. And so I swung through Taco Bell. I know. I haven't eaten a Taco Bell taco in ages. And you're probably going to send me hate mail, but they were surprisingly tasty. Especially because I took my yuzu hot sauce with me. Running low here. But I walked in there, and you know, when you're an old DJ, like I've said before, there's all this stuff that runs through your mind. Your own brain is an MP3 player. And so I'm sitting there waiting for my three Taco Supremes to come up, and went over and got myself three little packets of Taco Bell fire sauce, because, you know, just in case that the yuzu wasn't good, it was good. I didn't open the fire sauce. And so the guy comes up, and in the meantime, the Muzak starts playing Sir Duke by Stevie Wonder. And I can't help it. It's not pretty when it happens. But you'd rather see me dancing in Taco Bell than see a video of Alex Jones screaming in Lucy's Chicken now, wouldn't you? Sure you would. It's downright comical. But Sir Duke came on and it's you know, if you don't move a little bit when Sir Duke plays, you're probably dead. And so I'm headed out the door with my little sack of tacos in hand, and I stopped and I just did it, you know, I just did a little footwork. And dude over by the drive-thru hollers, "I saw you." And I turned, and he was grinning real big, and I grinned at him. And I said, "How do you not?" He said, "Get it." And I did it again and headed on out the door. And I'd like to think I made his day. He had a good story to tell about the pasty-faced, doughy white guy who was dancing on the way out of Taco Bell. And, well, it made me feel... Dancing makes me feel pretty good, too. So does singing. "Welcome to my world." It still hasn't worked. Oh, well. Let's go talk to John in PA. Hey, John.
Hey, man. What's going on?
You know, it's Thursday. Beautiful day. I mean, you know, considering we're in a Trumpian hellscape, I'm in a pretty good mood.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, actually now with the job that I just started, like, well, good Thursdays are my Friday because we work 4 10-hour days, which I love.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah, I love it, man. It's cause
that gives you a 3-day weekend to jam, right? Cause you still got the band?
Yeah, I do have a band that is ready to play out, but we're just waiting for bookings around. We just finally got things rolling. I mean, I played with these guys for a year. it's weird because a couple of months ago, things got so bad, we lost our drummer, we lost our bass player, and then so we were without a drummer, we've got a drummer, and then we had no place to play, and we were just, you know, up to the point where I was like, you know, this isn't worth it. Then all of a sudden, everything, you know, kind of came together, and now we're like going strong and ready to play out now.
So how many how many pieces are you? It's you on guitar, you got a new drummer, you got a new bass player.
Well, now we also have a real young woman that sings in some songs, and also we're a hard rock band in metal, and she's into the screaming, you know, so she does that. It's pretty cool. Yeah, so it's basically five of us, actually, because there's also a male singer, too. So there's two singers, a female and a male.
So two singers, guitar, bass, and drums?
Yeah.
I mean, did you at least get him a kazoo and a triangle or a tambourine or something?
No, not yet.
I mean, even Robert Plant had a tambourine, man.
Yeah, I know. That's all of them. I told him, I said, because I'm looking for another, we're also looking for another guitarist, you know, and I said, rather than doing that, I told them that one of them two, why don't you play guitar, you know, but they won't, so, yeah. Now they want, they're willing to add a whole other member. But she actually said she can play keyboard, so we're going to try that out, too.
Oh, that could work.
Yeah.
I don't know how screaming the vocals while playing keyboard works out, but it could.
Oh, she probably won't play keyboard in the same song as that. Because I don't know if you ever heard of the band Tool.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, we play... It was a song from them, and then the singer has another band that we play a song from them too, and then we play like some other stuff that you'll hear on a regular rock and roll station too. So you know, it's kind of a variety, but leaning more towards the harder rock and metal.
I mean, you got any Zeppelin tucked away in there?
No, I don't. We're not playing that kind of rock. I used to play
too mellow.
I guess, yeah. I mean, we're into more of like a, yeah, like Tool, like almost like a Slipknot type of thing. You probably heard of them.
Who?
Slipknot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that, you know, maybe not as heavy as that, though. So it's, I'm into the heavier music. I'm also like, I appreciate, you know, Zeppelin as well. Definitely. There's another band out there now. I don't know if you've heard of them yet. Young Guys. What do you think about them? I'm sure you've heard of them.
No, I haven't. Now I have purpose in my life. I have to go and check them out.
Well, you see, there's an issue here. Some people think that they sound exactly like Led Zeppelin, and they're big, huge, man. They're real young guys. They're like in their early 20s. People in the horn community, somebody out there listening knows who I'm talking about.
And they're called the young guys.
Greta Van Fleet.
Oh no! Okay, so yeah. Greta Van Fleet. Yes.
Yeah. So people think I don't know how you feel how you feel about them sound like Led Zeppelin. But I mean, sometimes I think they could sound like a brand new Led Zeppelin song. You know.
I saw a review because they put out their first album not too long back, right?
Yeah,
because they were kind of internet famous first.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then they put out their first album. I saw, and you know, I don't take reviews to heart. You know, they don't build monuments to critics. But I read that review, and it wasn't so much a review of the album as it was a crushing brief against the idea of Greta Van Fleet.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was just brutal.
But the thing is, and here's another issue that comes out of that yet, is the fact that they are good. So, like, they're good, but when you hear their music, you cannot help but think that that they're trying. They have to be deliberately sounding just like Led Zeppelin. Some people say that. I'm kind of on the fence. I don't know. You know, I'm not into their music per se, but I can like recognize the talent in it. You know what I mean? But it's like almost like I don't know.
Well, that was the complaint in the review that I read, John, was that Greta Van Fleet almost sounds like it was created by some sort of postmodern rock and roll AI.
AI?
You know, artificial intelligence. That it was just hitting some sort of algorithmic high points to make people respond.
Oh, my God. I never even thought about it that way. That, you know, to me, I'm sorry, but that makes some sense. But other people will say this, though. It's a divisive issue, in a sense, for the rock community. So other people would say, well, you're not giving these young guys a chance and, you know, and all this stuff. And that's why I tell them, say, like, well, this is my position on it. I think they're good, talented, you know, but I think that they're not original enough. And it's...
There was a whole lot of, wow, isn't this derivative?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I guess that's where it comes from. And I'll admit, I guess I'm a little jealous of him too, being a musician. You know, that was my dream to be big like that. But, you know, now I know it's never going to happen, even, you know, no matter how good I ever get. You know, I know that's probably never going to happen. So, but I'm fine with that. I'm at peace with that. I could, you know, do what I do, you know, for the rest of my life, and I guess I'll be fine with it. As long as, well, you know, we still have a country and we still have a fucking planet.
Well, that is kind of the sine qua non to having a rock and roll band. If it was up to me, you know, Greta Van Fleet gets compared to Led Zeppelin. I wish somebody would come along that was like the Greta Van Fleet of Little Feet. Greta Van Feet.
There you go.
I'm a big Little Feet fan.
You know, I've never heard it.
You are kidding me.
Is that bad?
Well, I mean, I'm an old fart. So, you know, but if you've never heard Little Feet, it might be life-changing.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to check it out. I have no idea. I don't know it from Adam.
I mean, Lowell George? Okay.
Sounds familiar.
No, okay. And you didn't even call in to talk about rock and roll. That was just our conversation starter.
Yeah.
But I can't let that go by. I'm looking up because we've already fucked up the YouTube file. So let's just go ahead and do this. This is a live rendition of my favorite Little Feet song. And Lowell George's vocals were just brilliant. Hold on here. Fair use. Comes the vocal. Man, did you hear that growl on the second no?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, okay, well.
Yeah, I don't know why I never heard that name.
Well, let me just recommend for a little light listening, the greatest Little Feet out is live, and it's Waiting for Columbus. You just can't go wrong. But then again, I'm an old fart, so yeah. With that understanding, might be worth it. But again, as much fun as we have talking rock and roll, that's not why you called.
Oh, okay. Yeah, are they from the 70s real quick?
Yeah. Lowell George at one point played with Frank Zappa.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah, Frank Zappa is off, and then his son and daughter are very good, too.
Yeah.
But, it's been a while, since I called in, and
it has been, and we worry when we don't hear from the members of our family community after a while. I worry about either pissing people off or people just hell, it ain't worth it. But you, last time you checked in, you were working a gig this time of day.
A
job.
Oh yeah. I started this job back in late December. Yeah, it's not bad. It's I'm machining tractor parts for Caterpillar. So it's not for Caterpillar, it's a company that does it, that kind of subcontracts Caterpillar. A buddy of mine I grew up with, he works there. He's a journeyman there and stuff. So he got me in there, and I'm running the lathe.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit of experience with machining, but I never ran lathe before, so I'm a little, scared shitless, of course, but. So if there's anybody in the horn community that knows how to run a lathe and has any advice, yeah, feel free to let me know. But anyway, yeah, so, things have gotten pretty crazy, man, politically. We're pretty fucked, dude. Seriously, after this Mueller report, I don't know if people realize how much damage that did to this country and how much power it gave this man. I don't know if people realize it, but it's not cool, and it's people are gonna see it, man. I seriously think that one of the last pieces that these people needed to form their dictatorship came from that Mueller report.
Oh, well, that, look, it's not just that, not that I'm being disagreeable, but it's that coupled with the national emergency. We have not yet begun to tap half of the things that he can do with that goddamn national emergency declaration.
Right. Yep, I know. And that, of course, is a problem, for sure. I don't know. How the hell he was even this is the thing that I think the media, maybe deliberately by now, they just let him get this is because of the media, they let him get away with everything, and them hyping up that the Mueller stuff also didn't help, and they repeat their narrative over and over and over again. That's what they do. They're like a stenographer for them. Or like a spokesperson. The media has seriously become spokespeople for these fascists, and I think that maybe the people that run the big corporations, for profit media corporations, probably are fascists as well. So this is all deliberate, man. And with the national emergency, that's coupled. It's like I said, it's going to be a series of pieces that they need. But it's going to, they're getting there, too. They really are. And, I don't think people realize that there's a lot of people in this country that don't realize that there's a segment that's brainwashed, legitimately brainwashed. And that is not a misuse of the term.
No, it's an actual phenomenon. But there's also, please remember, John, there's also a willing component to being a maggot. There are people who are thrilled to death with it, who are, for instance, filing their taxes right now and finding out they have been screwed to the wall, like a butterfly pinned in an insect collection. But they still love him because he hates all the same people they hate. Gay people, black people. It wouldn't matter. Klansmen and neo-Nazis don't worry about their tax obligations. They worry about changing this country to make it into a fascist wonderland.
Yes. That's exactly right. And that's what they want. And they will not stop until it's that. And when it's that, they're going to be affected just as much as everybody else. They're not going to be glorified. Maybe some of the famous ones that are on TV all the time, like Candace Owens or people like that, or might be glorified when they finally get what they want, completely take over. If that happens, hopefully we can stop them.
Or, you know, when Diamond and Silk get to anchor the evening news.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, you know, and that's. I mean, this is all appalling. I mean, this is a cult, and people do not understand it. And when you tell them it, like I told people, like I told a guy right to his face, I told him, I said, this is a cult. Like, he is a Trump supporter, and I told him straight out that he's in a cult.
How does he respond? Oh, we're going to have one of those evenings. Now, hopefully it'll come back in a second. Skype was so awesome before Microsoft got hold of it and did what Microsoft always does to things, i.e. ruin it. Can't even blame this one on Frontier, it looks like. Are you there, John? No? Okay. Well, John, if you can hear me, try back in. We'll try to get you back on the program. That's annoying as hell. Yeah, let me see which connection we're on. Okay, that's probably the problem. Well, anyway, but I think that's something we have to keep in mind. We're talking about rational reasons not to support this fascist Mar-a-Lago Mussolini wannabe. Reason and logic don't work with this bunch. Okay? So, you know, there's that. But let's pop back over, and we got, okay, so we're done with Jim Reeves, we're done with Precious Lindsay. What else? Oh, this is cute. Did you catch the story where the Trump regime was busted? I mean, not busted, but caught using, wait for it, AOL email to negotiate the sale of nuclear science to our partners in peace, the Saudis? You know, if you talk about nuclear power in the Middle East and you say, like, nuclear power in Iran within 15 words of each other, the whole world goes, brooga, brooga, brooga. You know who goes, brooga, 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 when you say nuclear and Saudi in the same breath? Everybody in Yemen. Because if you think the Saudis would take a nuclear reactor and use it for peaceable purposes and not make an atomic bomb, which they would then promptly drop on Yemen, well, You don't know the Saudis very well, do you? No. Because they would. No, but it really happened. Deputy National Security Advisor KT McFarland got stone cold caught using her personal AOL.com email account. I wonder if she's on dial-up. To do White House official United States government business. The House Oversight Committee, run by Representative Elijah Cummings, had sought documents from wee little Jared and some other creeps in the White House. When it turned out that through the document request that, yeah, Jared uses WhatsApp, owned by Facebook, no really, to carry out negotiations, including with Mohammed Bone Sawman. And KT McFarland was communicating with Tom Barrack, who's a pal of Trump and chair of the president's inaugural committee, about sending sensitive U.S. nuclear technology to the royal, serene, noble, high, gracious, bone-sawing kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Because that's good for America. Wow. I don't even want to think about that. But that's how they, as the kids say, that's how they roll. But it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And you never know what, wait, what's that? Oh, wait a minute. I got a cowbell for Earther. You've got treasonous dimwit mail. I guess that's what KT McFarland, that's very good, Earther. Earther brings some high quality comedy to the program. Treasonous dimwit mail. So you saw the story about how Devin Nunez sued a Twitter account called Devin Nunez's Mom. And he also sued a Twitter account called Devin Nunez's Cow. Because Devin Nunez doesn't understand that it's okay to do satire and parody in the new 90 states of America. Well, right on time, that fell apart. Okay, so we're going to have to... Uh-huh. Yeah, we'll get back to Devin Nunez's Cow, or particularly Devin Nunez's lawsuit, here in just a second. Trying to make sure folks can reach the program if they want to. Well, in the course of digging around in that manifest silliness, we found out something. Not that it's going to be a big surprise. But we found out that Devin Nunez is, we know he's a Republican, so the next one ought to be easy. Devin Nunez is a racist. Yeah. We found out from a 2010 clip from Washington Journal. I don't know how long Todd and Steve have been watching Washington Journal, but... he was a lot younger back then, Dev was. And he was talking about an assault on Representative John Lewis over passage of the Affordable Care Act. John Lewis, along with Emanuel Cleaver of Missouri and Representative Andre Carson of Indiana, pointed out that teabaggers, remember before they were, you know, before they were maggots, they were teabaggers. Well, they pointed out that teabaggers were using racist slurs against Congressman Lewis. This may have been the famous incident in which the good, God-fearing, patriotic, upstanding teabaggers spat on civil rights hero John Lewis. Let's go back to those halcyon days of yesteryear and Washington Journal.
We're hearing a lot of angry comments yesterday aimed at a couple of your colleagues, including Barney Frank and Congressman John Lewis, using the N-word as some of the protesters jeered at him as he walked through the halls of the Capitol.
Yeah, well, I think that when you use totalitarian tactics, people begin to act crazy, and I think there's people that have every right to say what they want. If they want to smear someone, they can do it. It's not appropriate, and I would stop short of characterizing the 20,000 people who are protesting that all of them were doing that.
It's not appropriate to spit on a member of Congress, but. Well, he understands people hurling racist insults at African-American members of Congress because they're not just African-American members of Congress, they're totalitarian African-American members of Congress. Yeah. So it's okay to scream that word as long as you can say, "Well, I only called him that because he's a totalitarian," that word. Not that there are many teabaggers or maggots out there who can pronounce or maybe even spell totalitarian. Let's see, T-O-T-A-L-I-T-A-R-I-A-N. Yep, got it. Then again, for-profit, the multimillionaire for-profit media. I was tuned into my filthy little habit this morning, and I heard Mika, not once but twice. If she'd said it three times, a rooster would have crowed. Use the word that has been used on me here by senders of hate mail from time to time, referring to our little community here as my sycophants. Even the brain dead asshole who used that term at least spelled it right, maybe. But I know I pronounced it right. Not Mika, though. No, no. Syncophants. So we're going to have to add syncophant to our list that includes Halcon and Calliope. Ah, yes, as the syncophants gathered around to think back to those halcyon days when they would dance a merry when they would dance a merry gavotte to the melodies generated by the calliope. Off to New Jersey with us, where a speaker was brought in to talk to some high school students. Yep, Madison High School in New Jersey. And student athletes at Madison High School had to go to a Saturday assembly on, quote, positive leadership values and a culture of sportsmanship. For some reason or another, Madison Superintendent Mark Schwartz, ironically named, chose not to identify who the speaker was. If it's a Saturday assembly for student athletes, I'll just about bet you it's the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, but that's just me guessing. the unidentified speaker who was talking about positive leadership values and a culture of sportsmanship presented the young scholar athletes with a list of positive leaders. The list included a photograph of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and one of Abraham Lincoln and one of George Washington. And a photo of, oh, come on, you know, this is Trump-merica. Yeah, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, and Adolf Hitler. Speaking to the young scholar athletes, the motivational speaker said Dr. King was a positive leader. But Adolf Hitler, on the other hand, was a good leader with bad moral character and intentions. In the letter that Superintendent Mark Schwartz had to send home to the parents of Madison High School students, he said, "It was unnecessarily provocative and insensitive for the speaker to include the image of a criminal whose legacy includes the systematic torture and slaughter of millions of Jews, the disabled, and others in Eastern Europe. As a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, I can't help noticing that the word wrong isn't in that paragraph. It was wrong, not unnecessarily provocative." So is it the unnecessarily part that creates the problem here? Because I confess I'm a mite confused. Because I think the first word I would have gone for was wrong. Insensitive? Insensitive? Because somebody's precious fifis were hurt? No, it was wrong. I guess maybe they didn't disclose the name of the speaker so as to protect the speaker's reputation. I guess. Hey, are you back, John?
Yeah. Oh, Bob, did you see that lady in Pennsylvania praying?
Oh, yeah, we ran that last night for prayer meeting. There's no way I'm blowing past that. Yeah, she's from the Pennsylvania.
Did you see that?
No, I did see it. We ran it last night as part of prayer meeting Wednesday. I was going to ask. She's from the Pennsylvania, Bamastania part of Pennsylvania, isn't she?
I've never heard of Clinton County before in my entire life, man. I guess so.
Yeah, she was a real Lulu.
Oh, man. No, people are upset, man. Even some Republicans seem like they're not, like, non-openly religious Republicans are very turned off by.
Well, the Republican Speaker of the House.
People.
The Republican Speaker of the House actually grabbed her by the elbow and was like, "Yeah, that's enough, sister."
Oh, yeah? I didn't see that part of it.
Yeah, and kind of hustled her off the dais.
Because of the Muslim lady, like this bigotry against Muslim people is getting out of hand, and this is the thing, like, you know, they're gonna, like, it's gonna get. I hope it doesn't get worse, but I think it is, you know, and that's what I like. I'm trying to fight it, but it's hard to when you have a media that just allows these people to get away with whatever they want. They allow them to get away with it, and they allow anti-Muslim bigotry. Which is anti-Semitic, technically. It's anti-Semitic. Literally by definition, if I'm not mistaken. You can look up in the dictionary, and a Semite is a person who speaks Arabic or Hebrew, Hebrew or something.
You can make that argument, but you'll piss off a whole lot of Jewish people because they have declared that anti-Semitism applies only to Jewish people. And that's not me being a dick.
Yes.
They say that when you claim that it applies to both Arabic people and Jewish people, that you're watering down the hatred inherent in anti-Jewish hate. And I understand their point.
Okay.
Because
yeah, I get it.
I mean, yeah, Semitic tends to refer to a broad group of people. But the fact of the matter is, both Hebrew and Aramaic and Arabic all stem from what's called the Nilo-Saharan language group, which means that none of those languages evolved in what we now refer to, well, what was once referred to geographically as the Levant. You know, Lebanon, Palestine, Syria. Those languages didn't evolve there. They evolved over in North Africa and around the Nile, Nilo-Saharan.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know much. I actually heard, I want to say it might have been Malloy that was talking about, made that point one time. And then I also saw, for some reason, I think I came across the definition one time, and I saw that that's what it said. And, yeah, I just, I was
well,
just,
and,
I was
and that is, and that is technically correct.
Yeah, yeah, but like still the anti-Muslim bigotry, it's getting out of control, man. And you, I mean, you don't, I don't have to tell you. I'm preaching to the choir over here, but you know, it's, you know, we gotta try to stop these people in 2020. And there's a lot of imbeciles out there. There's a lot of people that are enablers. Like, why did Van Jones go to CPAC and kiss the asses of all these conservatives and these Republicans and lie? It said that the Republicans are leading the movement of criminal justice reform. And that is just not true. It's not true. Because if...
Well, no, it's not. It's not true.
Trying to circumvent,
but the reason he does that is because... Van Jones was once upon a time a brilliant...
I lost you.
Oh, I'm still here. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Once upon a time, Van Jones was a brilliant, up-and-coming young activist. And then he got, and he was all into sustainability and renewable energy and all of that stuff. And so he got tapped early on in the very young Obama administration to be part of that effort. And then he was attacked by Glenn Beck. And the Obama administration promptly chucked him under the bus. And that's after that, he became a media personality, got hired by CNN. So when CNN says, hey, we want you to go to CPAC, he goes to CPAC. And he's one of these bridge builder types. He actually thinks that you can carry on a meaningful conversation with the maggots. When anybody who's ever tried to knows you can't, and maybe he just doesn't think about the fact that the whole time he was there at CPAC, all those maggots were only thinking one word.
Of course, but the thing is, you know, he straight up pointed at, he took his finger and pointed at it and said, you guys are leading the movement on criminal justice reform. And I'm like, what? Like, what are the Republicans doing in Florida? They're trying to circumvent that ballot initiative that passed to let ex-felons vote. Yeah, so like, you know, that, it's stuff like that, and they don't even want to try to legalize marijuana, which is the biggest of the prison population. I mean, marijuana is a huge reason why I'd say probably a good three-quarters of the people locked up in these prisons, or it has something to do with, at least the county jails and stuff, has to do with marijuana. And that's ridiculous.
Well, it's downright... Our marijuana prohibition is downright stupid.
Of course. It's,
well, but did... Okay, so, I mean, you want to... Nazis and...
They don't want to...
So did you see the story out of Florida, John?
You're probably going to have to...
A biracial brother and sister in Leesburg, Florida, 16 years old and 12 years old, boy 16, brother, sister, little girl was 12, And they were walking a trail to a convenience store to buy candy. And I think that anytime I see something like that, I think about Trayvon Martin, because we realize how dangerous it is for children who are not whiter than the driven snow to go get candy at a convenience store in Florida. And it almost became another tragic white wing horror when James Ridenour and Brent Van Bessien saw the children, started screaming slurs at them. And you know what we mean by slurs.
Yep.
And then one of the maggots, because all you got to do is see the picture and you realize they're maggots. Well, they fired at least two times at this 16-year-old boy and his 12-year-old sister with a gun. One they shot near the girl's foot, the other they shot into the air, and God alone knows where the bullet came down.
Terrifying it must have been. Man, I would have been so terrified if I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Having that happen. Go on.
Oh, they're not. You know, they'll probably have some PTSD out of it. I don't know how you wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then they were arrested, and it turns out that one of the guys, Van Bessien, had a rap sheet for domestic violence and armed robbery. And lo and behold, right there in the middle of his chest, there it was, a tattoo of the Iron Cross. And he's got himself one of those goofy white supremacist haircuts and a little bit of chin whiskers, just sort of in a circle around the pointy part of his chin.
Wow. Yep, there's a lot of these people, Bob. A lot of these people. A lot more than people think. They say that there's a very small percentage of this country. No, there's a large percentage of people, at least around where I'm at, that support Trump big time. Some people big time, others, like, I can't even tell you. I say something that is alarming to me, and I hope that this doesn't have a big impact in 2020. But there's people, and a lot of people that I'll talk about Trump that don't normally, would normally, like, not support him. They look at me and say, well, you know, he's getting things done. And we have a great economy. I had some people tell me that. Like, even, like young women that I used to, like, hang out with and stuff I never thought would ever say that, you know, about Trump, somebody like Trump. You know what I mean?
I don't know where this economy that's just humming along like a well-oiled machine is, because it's not here in West Virginia.
The media is telling people this. And this goes back to the media. People, everybody that's hearing me, these people in the media, you know what I mean? I don't know what their agenda is. I don't know what it is. And I don't know if their intentions are good and they're just doing the wrong thing. But they're screwing up big time. And they're giving a lot of power to a lot of very bad people, you know? And that one of the reasons is I think they repeat this stuff. They repeat it. Like, that's where this is coming from.
They like it, John. They like it. See, when we lost our connection the last time, you were talking to some maggots around you, and I said what I was in the process of saying was that, yeah, how'd that work out? Because they don't use the higher intellectual functioning of their brains. Maggots use what we call the lizard brain, the amygdala, which is centered primarily on shit they're afraid of, shit they hate, people they hate, people they're afraid of, and with no reason, or it's pure unmitigated emotionalism. And so as long as their emotions are satisfied, their brains are never engaged.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what's going on, and that's why they're easily brainwashed. And they're victims. They're victims. And we think they're assholes right now, or I think they are. A lot, you know, that I work with that I generally like, but, you know, they're into Trump and that. I think that a lot of them are just people are just, they're just victims of this guy, man, and the cult and the enabling of the Republican Party. And, you know, to go back to anti-Muslim hate real quick, that there's some stuff that's going on that isn't big enough to make the news. And this is probably going on everywhere. You know, if it's going on in one place, I got an example right now about to tell you. And you know, if this is happening here like this, in this type of instance, it's happening a million times out right now over. But the reason why I have my job, and I'm dead serious about this, is because the guy that they had working there before me that I replaced – literally got fired because threatened to kill Muslims. And I swear on my life, I am not kidding about that. You know what I mean? And that's what people don't understand. That this is, if it's happening like that in a place like that, I know it's happening a million times over, you know what I mean, all around the country because of this one man.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, it's like when I was talking with Reggie. We could impeach him. He's not going to be removed from office. Our only hope is to build a coalition of people of goodwill across the entire country and across all strata of society, with the single-minded goal of defeating him and making and but after that, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, by way of analogy, if we do elect a Democrat president, everything is not going to immediately be okay. There's going to be a lot of work to do to clean up this country and eliminate the hate that drove him. And if he's defeated, remember Michael Cohen said he will not go peaceably. But we can't be afraid of that. But if you think back to the end of the Lord of the Rings, after the ring gets destroyed and after Sauron, you know, turns into vapor and blows away, there's a whole lot more book left. Because they have to go up, and then there's a shit ton of orcs to deal with, and the Uruk-hai, and Saruman, and Wormtongue, and the whole place is just gone to shit. And job one becomes cleaning up Middle Earth. And that's what life after Trump is going to be like. Part of your brain's out if we can defeat him in November 2020. But then when you sober up and the hangover's gone, recognize that it is going to be an ass-busting endeavor just to try to fix the shit that he has already broken. Because he has broken it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, because, shit that he stirred up, and, like, we're going to be dealing with it. Even like you said, like, after he's gone, we're still going to be dealing with his allies. They're still going to be running to power, you know, and I'm afraid that they're going to be in power for a long time because these people will not stop at anything. They lie so blatantly, and some people just believe it, and I don't know. There's just a lot to take in, a lot to unpack about it. But I'm worried, and I've been worried for a while, and I warned about this guy. I remember in 2015 yet, Christmas of 2015, I told family members of mine that I thought he was going to be the next president. I said, I think he's going to freaking be, you know, not only get the nomination, Republican nomination, but I think he's going to win it. You know, I told people that even that early on, because I saw it happen. I saw it coming, man. I saw it. So did you.
Yeah. And I mean, are the Nazis going to go away just because Donald Trump gets defeated?
No, absolutely not. I bet you you're still seeing stories that Donald Trump Jr. wants to run for president. These people, it's just going to keep going on and on. I genuinely think that he, and I know we should never, ever say never. Never say never. But I don't think he would win if he ran in 2024. Because that man is really
sick. Well, if you've been listening but not calling, you know what? If he wins in 20, I know who's running in 24.
Ivanka, yeah.
Yeah, because the ultimate finger in America's eye will be for darling Ivanka to be America's first woman president.
Yep.
She's being groomed for it. He holds her in far higher esteem than he does his idiot son because he talks about his son and says he's an idiot.
Yeah. They don't like each other. Like, he doesn't like him. He doesn't like either one of them. He probably doesn't like Barron. Barron's probably way smarter than he is. But, you know, it's like...
Yeah, but... Donnie the Elder will have long since gone to his long home by the time Barron's old enough to run. But that, yeah, I'm sure they sit around talking about that.
Oh, yeah, they do. Sure. You know, these people.
Ivanka and then Don Jr. and then Eric, and then by then it'll be Barron's turn. They're the ones who are talking about empire. And that's what pisses me off so much about the short sighted, dumber than fucking dirt assholes who were Clinton Dynasty, Clinton Dynasty, Clinton Dynasty, Clinton Bush, Bush Clinton, Clinton Dynasty.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, Chris Hedges, all right, and we can say what we want about him too, but Chris Hedges said something something I heard him say. This is wild. The fall of America is going to come because of imbeciles on people on our side. Imbeciles. People like your Chuck Schumer. People like, you know, the people that scream, oh, Clinton Dynasty, Clinton Dynasty. People that go around saying, like, are constantly nitpicking at everything every move the DNC makes. Oh, look how corrupt that is. And then going telling everybody how corrupt it is. So what are they going to do? They're not going to fucking run for Democrats. What happens then? The only party that runs against runs against Republicans are Democrats that have a viable chance. And it goes to the Republicans because these people refuse to go out and vote, and they spread shit.
And I don't know how much time you spend on social media, John. But it's truly kind of depressing. I saw one tweet the other day where this allegedly liberal person on Twitter mentioned Elizabeth Warren by name, mentioned Kamala Harris by name, and then mentioned Beto and mentioned Bernie, but referred to Pete Buttigieg as the gay guy. Just the gay guy. And the nitpicking nitpicking and the scab picking out there, and that's why I'm stepping back this time. I'm just stepping back. I don't get a vote in the primary until May of 2020. It'll be all over. It'll be all over. But the Bernie would have won by then, or the Bernie was robbed. And in that instance, I'm not picking anybody. If Bernie's the nominee, I'm voting for Bernie for president. If Kamala Harris is the nominee, I'm voting for Kamala Harris for president. If Beto is the nominee, I'm voting for Beto for president. If Pete Buttigieg should happen to be the nominee, I'm voting for him. Okay? If Elizabeth Warren is the nominee, I'm voting for Elizabeth Warren. You see where I'm going here. But I am damned I'm damned if I'm gonna get on some fucking divisive bandwagon, in not quite April 2019 when the first primary doesn't go down until January.
Right. It's no point. There's no point in it. All you're going to do is drag us down.
All you're going to do is get pissed off at the people who aren't on the bandwagon you're on, and the people that are on different bandwagons from you are going to get pissed off at you for not being on their bandwagon, and some of the bandwagoners are worse than others.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's maddening to me. It's painful because they're so united. You know, on everything, and it's not that hard to just come together for a common cause and say, let's defeat these goddamn bastards. You know what I'm saying? Like, but no, they don't. They, like some people, like we had a guy, my colleague is Lloyd Smucker, who ran against somebody that, you know, the progressives in this area really, you know, adored, and she's a real good lady, and he lied and. Well, I mean, not for no reason, but he lied and smeared her and won. But now, like, these local progressives were praising him because he finally held a town hall for the first time in his second year of his second term. You know what I mean? Or first year of his second term. He didn't hold a town hall for his first term, and now the local progressive community was saying, thank you, Representative Smucker, for holding a town hall finally. And like, not sarcastically, dude, not sarcastically. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
they're gonna wind up getting a pass on everything, and it's hard to get that everybody on board to try to, you know, defeat the common cause.
And there's only one road that leads to Trump leaving office on January 20th, 2021, and that is if everybody commits to voting for the Democratic nominee.
Yep.
And if there's anybody out there who says, you know, I'll take my vote elsewhere if my candidate doesn't win, then let's get an early start and let me say, fuck you.
Exactly, dude. Dude, I'm right there with you. We can do this after we beat them. If they want to gripe about who should be president or who should be the nominee in the next election after that, go right ahead. I don't care. As long as it's not some goddamn fascist that's in power. You know what I mean? So, but we have a priority right now. We need to save this country, man. And it's weird because everybody thinks that, like, the right wing thinks that they're the ones that are saving this country from us. But we know what the reality is. I don't know. But, well, that's all I've got for you, Bob.
All right, John. It was time well spent because it's been a long time since we talked. I hope everything continues to go well. Hope you find yourself a guitar player. I hope your female singer decides to play keyboards, and I hope you get a bunch of gigs.
Yeah. Thank you, and good luck to you in D.C.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I'll get this thing passed.
We're trying. We're trying for all we're worth, and God Almighty, just trying to get out of here. I mean, I'm down to 2 days, and both of those days are packed to the point that the walls are bulging. So when I take off out of here, on Sunday, well, I hope I can get away early because I don't want to be pulling in late at night to start work on Monday morning. But it's going to be, I'm really, I've got the new rig here. I'm so excited about it. The community came together to help put it together. And I'm just hoping I get time to get a few programs in because I think it'll be well worthwhile.
Definitely. But hey, you know what? I think this bill's going to get to the Senate. And to be honest with you, I think it's a good chance that Trump might sign it.
No, he won't. It won't get through the Senate, and Trump would not sign it. Because Trump doesn't give
look at what happened to criminal justice.
No. Trump doesn't give a goddamn about the health and well-being of people in West Virginia. We're just stage props to him. Or Appalachia, generally.
Oh, yeah, generally. I know that. But you could use that stage prop shit as an advantage to you to get it passed.
But Mitch McConnell will never let it see the light of day in the Senate.
Which is ridiculous because he's from Kentucky.
Well, no, it's not ridiculous because whatever money doesn't come from the National Ruble Association, John, comes from the Kentucky Coal Association.
Oh, okay. Yep, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, have yourself a good evening and rock on, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
All right. Later.
Bye.
Bye. That's our buddy John calling from Central PA. All right. 30 minutes left in the program. $200 fundraising goal this evening. Still at zilch. I would have been thrilled to announce that even somebody kicked in at 10 bucks, but that hasn't happened. Yeah, see, here's a good example. D'Angelo on Twitter just sent me a message a couple of seconds ago. I'm a revolutionary socialist, and I'm for the destruction of the capitalist mode of production and the takeover of the means of production. But Trump and the Republicans going is top priority. Yeah, see? That's how it has to be. Because if it isn't, if we're not single-mindedly focused, and when I say get rid of Trump, what that means is save our country. Because this presidency and this RICO approach to government is a full-on existential crisis for the experiment that's been underway since 1787. Plain and simple. And in the time remaining in the program, you know, we've had some, you know, Alex Jones and all that silly shit. But I kind of want to focus. Go back to the previous idea or prior analysis. And it has to do, hey, there's that first 10 bucks. Thank you, James. Bless your heart. James in Illinois got us started. Thank you, James. We're down to 190 to go. Thank you so very, very much. There was a, I said, and you know, I'm not going to run away from it. This is truth as far as I'm concerned. I have said that Robert Mueller took a dive in terms of how he went about not very badly wanting to find anything wrong with the Trump presidency. Well, in the Washington Post today, this afternoon, in an article by Philip Rucker, Carol Loenig, Josh Dawsey, and Matt Zapatosky, a sort of a confirmation. The headline reads, "A Mueller Mystery." Oh, please. Who's the copy editor at the Post? Stop it. Just stop it, a Mueller mystery. Next on Nancy Drew, how Trump dodged a special counsel interview and a subpoena fight. Dodged? How do you dodge something when nothing's moving toward you? But the bottom line in the article is that around Thanksgiving 2017, Robert Mueller said, would the president pretty please, with sugar on it, sit for an interview? Oh, he doesn't want to? Okay. I mean, that's the essence of it. Do you remember all the time that was spent talking about, oh, well, what'll happen when Mueller subpoenas the president? Oh, wait, no, let's not start. No, let's start the story about 20 years ago. 22. And a fresh-faced young legal eagle, newly minted by the Federalist Society. A young lawyer who had a common man's taste and enjoyed beer. Brett Kavanaugh. Eager young space cadet to Ken Starr's Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century. And a few other players as well, George Conway being one of them, who moved heaven and earth to prove the constitutional principle that, sure, you can depose a sitting president. Why the hell not? And so, in the deposition of Bill Clinton, in which, remember, dirty-minded brat wanted to make sure they asked all the really good and filthy questions. Sir, if I said that I had testimony that you tore your condom off and walked naked across the room and dropped it in a waste paper can, would that be untrue, sir? That kind of crap. But the constitutional principle was established. You can depose the president under oath. You can subpoena the president, and he, by Jesus, has to show up under penalty of contempt. Well, that was the state of the law when Bob Nosedive Mueller was appointed special counsel. And yet, according to this article in the Washington Post, well, I'll be dipped if apparently Bob Mueller wasn't all a hand-wringing over whether or not he thought he could depose a sitting president. John Dowd was the White House counsel at the time. And, well, in Bob Woodward's book, Fear, Dowd is reported to have been terrified that the minute that Donald Trump's hand came off the Bible and his right hand dropped, that he would start telling a series of half-truths, mistruths, outright lies, and downright whoppers. Why? Because John Dowd's client is a pathological liar. You don't have to be Clarence fucking Darrow to realize that. Dowd later denied Woodward's claims in Fear, but the Washington Post went out and chased down witnesses to the event. It's recounted in this article. And they pretty much verified what was already in Woodward's book. Among other things, what caused Dowd to have the dribbling turtle squirts was an attempt to do a mock-up of a presidential interview with Trump. And it started out in hell and just kept going south. Again, because Dowd's client is a pathological liar. You know, you take three pictures, you've got a picture of George Washington. This man could not tell a lie. You got a picture of Richard Nixon. This man could not tell the truth. You got a picture of Donald Trump. This man can't tell the difference. And so what happened, and this is just gut-bendingly sickening. Dowd is reported to have said to Mueller, "You're screwing with the work of the President of the United States." And even an old country prosecutor would know enough to look and say, "Listen, bub, I'm investigating the question of whether the president is a fucking criminal. That's what I'm doing, pal." Well, an old country prosecutor who wasn't a goddamn Republican might have said that. Not a Republican special prosecutor. And in the Washington Post article is this particular passage in which Robert Mueller clutches his pearls and wrings his hands and wonders if issuing a subpoena to the President of the United States was, and this is a quote from the article, "legally feasible and what the costs of such a move might be to the overall investigation." You got that? Wondered if the subpoena was legally feasible and what the costs of such a move might be to the overall investigation. He was afraid he might get fired. But firing Robert Mueller would have triggered almost immediate repercussions that Trump probably could not have survived. But old Bob, he was going to make sure he didn't have to do that. Because Bob, when they tell him to march, he marches. When you tell Bob Mueller to jump, he ribbits like a frog and says, "How high? Because I'm a Republican." And so all John Dowd had to do was look at him cross-eyed, and Bob Mueller pissed himself. "I don't know if it's legally feasible to subpoena the president, and what the costs of such a move might be to the overall investigation." Horseshit. Fuck him. Brett Kavanaugh and George Conway had already established, carved it in stone, that you can goddamned well subpoena the President of the United States, but I guess only if he's a Democrat. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. And so, having soiled himself and gone and changed his armor, Mueller and the team, according to this article in the Post, begin trying to figure out a different strategy. And they would gently get Trump to sit down for an interview. Not a deposition. No one need take any of those nasty old oaths. Why, heck no. Meanwhile, Trump's legal team continued on the offensive. And then finally, Mueller said, ah, fuck it. Write some goddamn questions down. Send it to him. Let him fill it out in fucking crayon and send it back. And whatever he says, we'll say that it's all right. The fix was in from the day Mueller was appointed. Oh, he might get some pissant criminals whose criminality was so egregious that it was unavoidable. You know, your Roger Stones, your Manafort's, your indict some people you're never going to have to actually try. But the president? Well, the president's above the law, don't you know? If you really have a taste for kicking furniture, go read A Mueller Nancy Drew Mystery, How Trump Dodged a Special Counsel Interview and a Subpoena Fight. At one point last summer, when a lull in talks had the president's attorneys worried that Mueller was seriously contemplating a subpoena, bullshit they were! They knew the fix was in, too. That's why it's a fix. The people who pay somebody to take a dive know the dive is coming. The only time they're shocked is when the dive isn't taken. And then you just go and you beat the piss out of the guy who took the money and didn't take the dive. At one point last summer, when a lull in talks had the president's attorneys worried that Mueller was seriously contemplating a subpoena, White House lawyer Emmett Flood wrote a memo laying out the legal arguments for protecting the president's executive privilege. He sent the document to Mueller's office and to the deputy for top Justice Department official Rod J. Rosenstein, another Republican, who oversaw the probe, according to two people familiar with Flood's outreach. In the end, the decision not to subpoena the president is one of the lingering mysteries of Mueller's 22-month investigation, which concluded last week when he filed a report numbering more than 300 pages. God almighty, I've heard nothing at all. I've not heard nothing today, but 300 pages, 700 pages, 412 pages. Fuck all. Who cares how many goddamn pages it was? The roadmap that was sent to Congress over Richard Nixon was 74 pages. Something like that. But those paragraphs are nothing but inside the Beltway Mandarin speak. Lingering mystery, my ass. It's only a mystery if you're astonished that Republicans always, 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 always protect other Republicans. Unless there's just no way around it, like Paul Manafort or Roger Stone. Or an absolute dumbass. Like Michael Cohen. Our buddy Texas T knows understands it. Bob Mueller et al. Were all Republicans. They took the minnows just as with the Abu Ghraib investigations. No oaths there either. Just some, you know, grade E's going to prison. Go read this. See if you get the same take I did. By God, if I sit down to a game of three-card Monty, long before my shirt's off, I like to think I'd realize I'm being had. And man, were we not well chumped. And here's the excuse. In assessing whether to pursue such a high-stakes move, the special counsel was not operating with complete autonomy. That was a contrast with predecessors such as Kenneth Starr, who investigated President Bill Clinton and had broad leeway under the now-expired independent counsel statute. But Mueller was supervised by Rosenstein, a Republican, a Trump appointee. The special counsel, Rosenstein noted in one letter to a Republican senator, remains accountable like every other subordinate. So the tough old Marine turned out to be not quite so tough after all. Yeah. And he wasn't willing to risk being canned for something as petty as saving this nation. It's nothing short of sickening. And hey, thanks very kindly to Joseph and Nydia. Thank you so very much. That means that alongside James, we've knocked out $50 of the 100 of the 200 we needed to raise tonight. 10 minutes left. Are there 15 people with $10? 10 people with $15? Maybe. And I don't know who's on the stress line, but let's find out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, okay. Well, hi, Bob. How are you? My name is Kurt.
Hi, Kurt.
I'm a yes. I'm a first-time caller. But a long-time listener.
Well, by Jove, you get a cowbell.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
That's a first-time caller cowbell.
Well, I'm a first-time caller here, and I'm from Grand Forks, North Dakota stand.
Oh, wow. You're our second North Dakotan in as many nights.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I usually listen to you, Bob, through your podcast. So
sure.
I very seldom kind of like listen to you live, but I happened to catch you here now today. And I thought, well, by God, I gotta call up Bob today. But I just want to say that you're absolutely right. You know, another phrase, that the people, well, the mainstream media should really be using also was during the Nixon administration. For the sake of the country, he has to go. You know, or otherwise this country it's just going to fall apart. I mean, I see it every day here, Bob. Up here, you know, this is very much a red state, and it's like,
I mean, it's got to be a little bit like being
here. You know,
here.
You talk to some of these people here, and it's like, they're from another planet. I feel like I'm in a bad episode of Twilight Zone with some of these people.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a similar situation. It's like being in West Virginia, only flat.
Right, exactly. Right, yes. Yes, I'm in, you know, what they call the Red River Valley. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember, you know, we had that awful flood here in 97.
Sure.
In Grand Forks. And we have the Red River. You know, that actually flows to the north. You know, it goes up into Lake Winnipeg, up into Canada, you know. But I'm originally from Minnesota, Bob. I'm originally from the northwestern part of Minnesota, real close to the province of Manitoba, and not too far from Winnipeg.
Oh, up around the boundary waters?
No, the boundary waters, that's more east. That's
okay,
more kind of central and then the eastern part of Minnesota. I'm up in the northwestern part of Minnesota, which is close to North Dakota, but it also borders along with Manitoba, you know, the province of Manitoba.
Sure.
Up in Canada. And my, you know, actually my hometown is about, oh, God. My hometown is Lake Bronson, Minnesota. You know, just like Charles Bronson, you know, sort of like that.
Yeah.
But it's only about 15 miles from the border of Canada. So you know, my hometown is only about 70 miles south of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. So it's right up in the northwestern part of Minnesota from where I'm from originally. But I actually grew up, Bob, down in southwest Minnesota. I'm also a disabled, Bob. I've had it all my life. But I was at a crippled children's school down in southwestern Minnesota in a town called Worthington, Minnesota. And I was there, Bob, since I was there when I was 5 years old. I was there for over 9 years. And then I came home in the spring of 75. And then I was able to finish high school back in my hometown area. And if you're aware, that was when they passed that mainstreaming law, you know, for a disabled student. Now, this was back in 74. It was like a public law, 9-4 something. But I was a part of all that, Bob, when all that was going on. And I'm just, Bob, I'm just a couple years older than you are. I was born in 61.
Okay.
And I followed politics since I was a kid, and I remember the Nixon stuff and all this stuff. And I actually got wind of your show through the Mike Malloy program. And like I said, I probably have been listening to you, Bob, for the past, since probably 2006. And I got wind of your show from the Mike Malloy program. And I've been listening to you ever since. So I feel like I'm part of the Horn community. And
you absolutely are.
Yes, and I enjoy your show immensely.
Well, I'm so very glad that you do. And I'm glad. It's always good to know that there's one more person out there that we've never heard from. You know, I'd say, Kurt, that the vast majority of people who listen to this program, I never hear from, not even so much as an email. And then one night, one night the phone rings, and well, I mean, it doesn't ring, but you know what I mean. And
right.
Lo and behold, I get to match another name to another place, and the community draws a little bit closer. And
yes,
that's a beautiful
that's
thing.
Right. And then it keeps building too.
I sure hope so, because I want this conversation to continue and grow. Because we're going to need to close the isolation gap, especially among people of goodwill, as we get nearer and nearer to 2020.
Right. Oh, yes. Most definitely. Right. No, I agree with you. And it's unfortunate, you know. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm hearing myself through your line here. I don't know if it's...
That's odd.
If it's... What I was going to say just, Bob, here, just sort of briefly here, because I'm kind of hearing my echo here. I was just going to say, you know, Bob, I just never thought, you know, in our lifetime that it would ever get to this level, though. You know, I really am sort of surprised. And, you know, you said something a long time ago, which I definitely do agree. And that is, you mentioned one time, oh, God, this was a long time ago, Bob, but I thought you really nailed it. And that was when you said, you know, we saw the changes coming. And I remember it. To me, 1980 on. This is when this country got all fucked up. I mean, pardon my French, but it seemed like the 80s was the turning point of everything. And you know, you said something to the effect like, you know, we saw the changes coming, but we didn't know how to prepare to deal with it. And you were absolutely right. Because I remember the 80s. I went to college in 1980, my first year, and I remember, I was probably one of the few of my generation that did sort of like pay attention to what was going on. But I do remember that the 80s to me was when everything kind of got effed up.
Yeah, and it was our generation that took it on the chin.
Right.
Because
exactly.
Because The 80s were a time of considerable excess.
Exactly.
And
right.
I don't know about right. you, but I participated in some of it. But I also happened to be working in journalism at the time. So I remember Iran-Contra. I remember it very well.
Right. Yes.
And I remember,
yes,
and I think looking back, Kurt, we get a pretty good idea of what happens to a country when it blinks and lets overt criminal conduct slide. What we let slide in the '80s, what Bill Barr participated in covering up in the early '90s, has come home to roost, pressed down and shaken together, and 1,000 times more toxic. In the late second decade of the 21st.
Right. Oh, most definitely, Bob. Most definitely, yes. No, I agree with you. Yes, yes. No, we all kind of like partook in all the excesses. Yes, yes. I understand that. I remember it very well, Bob.
Yeah, I think for both of our sakes, probably best not to go into any of the gory details. But we know.
No, that's
no
right.
we know what we did.
No, that's right. That's right. However, though, Bob, we did pay attention to stuff.
Yeah, I have to continue to believe, Kurt, that this is not an irremediable situation.
Right.
Because if we just say, there's no fixing this, then basically, well, it's kind of like something you see around here from time to time when you get out into some of the rougher areas, where the car's just up on blocks and it's being parted out. I don't want that to happen to my country. And I don't want to think that the car's never going to run again.
Right.
But it has most assuredly been run into a ditch.
Oh, most definitely.
And
yes.
What's going to happen in November 2020 is we're going to find out if there's a tow truck coming.
Yeah, well, if there's one that can run, yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, Kurt, I am so glad you called. We're kind of at the end of things, but gosh, I hope it won't be. I hope it won't be your last call. And I hope.
No. I'll call you again sometime, Bob. And I really do love your program, and I love your Southern hospitality, and I always, you know, I always listen to you.
Well,
you're a great guy.
I'm glad to know.
The only unfortunate thing, Bob, is I wish I could help you out financially, but I'll tell you, I just barely make it through the months nowadays. It's just terrible the way things are.
I know. And I don't mean to make people feel bad when I pitch about keeping the program on the air. And don't you worry about it, because we've got a community of great goodwill. And we'll find a way to keep it going. Thank you, Kurt, and have a wonderful evening.
Okay, you too, my friend. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. New caller. Yay. Kurt calling from North Dakota. That's wonderful. We are very close to getting out of here, but I got a couple more things to share because Lady B sent along a graphic a moment ago when I mentioned Nancy Drew. A Nancy Drew mystery. The mysterious night we buried our last fuck. Fresh out of fucks to give. Yes. Lady B with a note also. Bob, with everything going on right now, I'm really fed up with the Democratic establishment. Like you, I will vote for whomever wins the Democratic nomination. I always have. But man, I'm tempted as hell to go radical. These wait-and-see motherfuckers are tiring. They tell us to be grateful because they have a key to the door. But I'd be lying if I didn't admit that I'd really like a motherfucker who's going to bulldoze it down. We need a fearless Democrat to run this country. I don't want them to go all Stalin socialist on us. I just want them to think boldly and have enough energy and charisma to pull it off. I think someday we may get it. But then again, as the saying goes, be careful what you wish for. I know, I'm still not a centrist. But it's tough once you have a working understanding of how this government operates, and not just how it operates, but how it was designed to operate, to see anything but practicing the politics of the possible. I want Medicare for all. Christ almighty, I want to be part of a country that takes climate change seriously. I want to live in a country where a jackass like Mike Lee gets up on the floor of the Senate and dishonors both the institution and his own oath, and the next election can count on being bounced the hell out for his lack of dignity and decorum, and most of all, his lack of concern about generations that will deal with the problem he refuses to acknowledge long after he is fucking dead. Maybe I want a government that's committed to those seven generations the way the people who first inhabited this continent were. Maybe it needs to be a law. It could be, you know. Back when John of Orange, the first Orange guy who troubled our world, John Boehner, was speaker. It was the sweaty wrestler. It was Denny the sweaty wrestler Hastert who put in the Hastert rule, who said that nothing could be considered in the House unless it had majority support from Republicans. We could just as easily have a rule that says nothing becomes law without a detailed examination of the impacts of that law on the next seven generations of American citizens, some as yet ungot and undreamt of. But with a rule like that, while they may yet be ungot, they will no longer be undreamt of. And so that's it for the program this evening. We close with a $150 fundraising deficit, and we'll carry that over to Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. Thanks again to Joseph and Nydia and James for keeping that from being $200. Thanks to all of you who contribute to keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. I don't just say that idly. I think about it. It's part of the core of who I am. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years. 20 faithful years. 20 years of labor and sweat at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.